And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I am Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague Stuart Mandel. We are taping this episode on Wednesday morning, and as we started about an hour ago, the SEC had its fourth postponement of this week's stew. The Missouri game against Georgia is now been nuked, but it's been taken off the schedule for this weekend. So they started out with seven games, and they're down to three. And remember, this was supposed to be a huge weekend in the SEC. Now, obviously, LSU has struggled on the field, so the LSU-Alabama game didn't carry the magnitude it normally does. Certainly, CBS was going to play up that there's the Masters this weekend, and that ties in. There's a internal viewership component for certainly ESPN and obviously CBS, and now there's only three games left. Fingers crossed that they're going to have those three. It has gotten very, very... A messy situation has gotten a lot messier, I would say, at this. Where do you think this is headed now that we're into mid-November?
Well, first of all, it's not just an SEC problem. It's a college football problem. It's a problem across the country, obviously, with COVID cases reaching record highs. And no end in sight. I mean, I think it's most people agree it's probably going to get worse in the winter months. So last week there were 10 games across college football that were postponed or canceled. As of this recording, and it's only Wednesday morning, there are seven. And we're running out of dates to make them up. And that's, I think, the biggest issue the SEC is dealing with now, is that Alabama and LSU don't have a common open date, in part because LSU already had one game postponed and against Florida, and now that game is being played on the 12th. So at the very least, I think they have to start moving some games to the weekend of the SEC championship game. And it's certainly Florida and Alabama are not close to clinching their divisions, but are in the clear driver's seat. And that means that a game like Georgia-Missouri could be played on the 19th. Now, LSU-Alabama is a lot trickier, but it's such a, even with a downtrodden LSU, it's such a marquee TV game that you would think they'll do a lot of shuffling to make it happen.
Let me ask you this, Stu. So we're talking about shoehorning games into dates that actually may be either filled or just may not exist in the calendar at this point. I'm curious to you, because I read your mailbag this morning, and you and I have had some discussions about this very subject offline this week. One of the things that has added to the complications is the back end of the college football schedule, when the playoff is supposed to go, as it's related to the bowls, has been locked in. And we are in uncharted waters with the COVID-19 pandemic. And obviously there's no certainties about where this thing is going to be in a couple months or a month or even a couple weeks now. Do you think they should have a lot more flexibility, and they being the power brokers of college football, the conference commissioners, and certainly the people who factor into the CFP, do you think they need to be more flexible and now more open to the idea that maybe it would be in the sport's best interest to bump back the calendar a couple of weeks?
I think the problem is if you start bumping the calendar back to make up regular season games, I mean, my much bigger concern is how are they going to play the actual playoff games? I mean, at the rate things are going, don't just like, you know, bury your head in the sand. There's a strong possibility that you'll get to December 28th and somebody has too many guys out in contact racing and they can't play in the college football playoff semifinal. So and then you're going to have to bump that game back, or you might have to bump the national championship back. So, and at some point, the guys on those teams, these are really good teams full of NFL prospects, need to start preparing for the draft. So I don't sense an appetite to push it back at all. But I also, anytime I ask about this, like, are you guys considering what to do if the games get canceled? There's been very little, you can tell there's been very little, I mean, I'm sure they've thought about it, but there are not any formal contingency plans yet. And there needs to be, because this is not, this is not going to suddenly end on December 1st or December whatever. The same larger trends that are contributing to regular season games being postponed will definitely hover over bowl season, and the playoff not exempt from that.
Before I want to get back to something else you wrote this morning that I thought was interesting in your column. But one thing that has come up a lot is contact tracing, and I think it gets talked about. And I think there's a chunk of, you know, people who assume that, wait, there's daily testing, why do you need contact tracing? And look, there's examples of this where you can look in the Big Ten. Wisconsin was the first school that really got hit hard by the impact of this, in terms of they went from one positive test a couple of days before they played Illinois. Next thing you know, a week later, it goes to like 28 within the program, or 27. I mean, that's in a week. And the risk is, once, you know, if you have somebody who maybe the virus is incubating in, then it can spread. I mean, you know, we've heard stories out at Baylor when they had a road trip, I believe it was to West Virginia earlier in the year, where they thought they had a false negative person who had the virus, and then it went from, like, when they came back, from like 2 to 9 to, you know, another 9, and they had to shut down the program for a week, and the only reason why players were allowed to the facility was just a test. And so that is the concern on the contact tracing. Just because you didn't test for it the next day doesn't mean you may not have it a couple of days later. And so where it's gotten very I guess very, very delicate is who fits into the category of the contact trace. You know, in some instances you hear it's like, well, if these players are roommates, I mean, it's hard to think that roommates are going to be wearing masks at home. You're a college student. Even if you're being cautious, you're probably not wearing a mask unless you're living with your like 90-year-old grandmother. So I think when schools try to sort out some of this now, from my understanding at Cal, it feels like it might be more an overreach of this, where you had a player at a position group, a defensive line, who had a positive test. They were meeting outside as a position group in a space that was marked off from a social distance standpoint. And so that's, I think, different than if you're living in a house or in a dorm with somebody who has tested positive. And so, as you know, look, everything is kind of a fluid situation with this, but I also think some of these things have been open to interpretation. And now you're also factoring in a handful of these schools may have had a lot of players test positive early on, long before the season and the games were played, but also probably in that 90-day window where they may have tested positive, that may be over 90 days now. So they could be caught up in the contact tracing part of this too. So I just think there's a lot of factors going on that have made this even more problematic as it relates to just having games and having the numbers of players to have games. What I wanted to ask you on this, though, and you wrote about this morning, is we've seen a bubble work in the NBA. We've seen it work in the WNBA. We've seen it work in the NHL. Now, Major League Baseball had some version of a bubble at the end of the season in the playoffs. The idea that you could have four teams in some version of a bubble in some city. It would not be cheap, but as you raised, the CFP is making a fortune. So why don't you walk people through how you think that could work?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's so much trickier in college football because it's not a centralized organization like Major League Baseball, like the NBA. The college football playoff is run by the commissioners of the conferences. So they would, to do something like that, they would have to, in the middle of their already perplexing season, get together and come up with that. And I just, realistically, is it going to happen? Probably not, but they should. I think we're headed toward us, you cross your fingers and hope for the best, but we could be headed toward a scenario where these are three of the most watched sporting events of the year in any sport. ESPN pays $608 million a year on average, over the course of the deal to televise those games and the other New Year's Six Bowls. You want those games to get played and played on the times that they're supposed to, those valuable January 1st dates. So, look, this is a time when schools are out for the most part. And even if they are back, most of them are doing remote learning anyway, so it wouldn't be like they're missing class. I just think, why couldn't you? Why couldn't you? And we're talking about I don't remember how many NBA teams were in the bubble, but we're talking about four teams. Granted, a college football team would probably bring 150 people, but you get a couple hotels, they make sure they're the only people in those hotels. You test them every day. You transport them back and forth to practice or to the games, and that's it. No contact with anybody outside of that. I think it should work, right? I mean, it's much more complicated than I'm sure I'm portraying it right now. But I mean, they did that for the baseball playoffs in Dallas, the Dallas area, and there was one positive test, and it came in the fourth inning of the last game of the whole thing. So it can work. But it's a matter of, I think college football more than other sports tends to be, well, that's just not the way it's done. We got to play the Rose Bowl on January 1st in Pasadena. There's not even going to be fans at the Rose Bowl this year. They don't need to play that game in Pasadena. They can play that game in Dallas or whatever city you choose for this bubble. And if you can't do that, at the very least, I would consider moving the semifinals to campuses. So at least that cuts down travel for two of the teams. I just think the setup that we normally have, you're talking about four teams getting on flights, traveling to Pasadena and New Orleans, staying in a hotel for three nights, coming back, and then two of those teams turn around and fly to Miami the next week in the peak of the pandemic. I mean, let's be realistic here. That's problematic.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
So let me throw this at you. So to me, one of the big issues moving it back is, as you said, ESPN is paying a fortune for this, and how do they make that work as viable as they can, and what that ties into. And we've talked about this when it doesn't relate to the pandemic, just on how the calendar would break, about what those dates mean and as a relationship to prime viewing windows. So the NFL wild card window, remember this year, a little bit as you referred to with the NBA playoffs, and I think you did with baseball, because it was a different playoff model. So you're going to have six wild card games this year in the NFL, and they're going to be on the weekend of the 9th and the 10th of January. So that makes it, probably a little more clouded, right? Now, obviously, Fox, who I work for, and obviously in full disclosure, they don't have the playoff, and they don't have the college football playoff. They obviously have the NFL. CBS doesn't have the CFP. They have NFL. So it's just like this becomes, how does ESPN, if the conference commissioners are on board with saying, hey, this might be our best scenario, how do they shoehorn that into a calendar? Because remember, the NFL, with that many games, the NFL is going to dominate that weekend, right?
And yeah, you wouldn't be able to play that weekend.
Yeah, I mean,
I remember gaming this out sometime in the summer, maybe when the Big Ten was starting to talk about coming back and seeing if we could, indeed push it back to allow them to get more games in Pac-12 as well. And I can't remember what I came up with. So right now it looks like the NFL is playing Saturday at 1 Eastern, 4:40 Eastern.
You can't do it. There are six games on Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. And then the following weekend, they pretty much dominate that too, because you have four games, because you have four games on the 17th. I'm sorry, two games on the 16th, two games on the 17th. So could you use, that as a lead-in, or maybe you're going to be on the front end of it, or you're going to be on the back end of it, depending on the time of day? That's not ideal for them, but you can't do a double header then. I mean, I guess you can, but you're going to lose a big chunk of your audience, what you think your viewing audience, because of just how much of a juggernaut the NFL fandom is.
I think you would have to play on like Thursday night, like play one on Thursday night and one on Friday night, or play a Thursday doubleheader, which, again, they pay so much money to show these games that get 20, 30 million viewers, and you would just be decimating that. So, you'd be losing, you just don't get a better window than January 1st. This happens to be a year when the semis are at the Rose and the Sugar Bowl, and they're January 1. The ratings are always higher in those years. So they really want to play on those dates. That's why there's no momentum to go ahead and push it back now. And then, I think I think the commissioners themselves, I think, have long ago accepted that we just might not get all our games in, and that's fine. If somebody plays 10 in the SEC and somebody else plays 9, so be it. Now, the teams might not be happy about that. The fans might not be happy about that, but that to them is the most practical solution. So I don't think they're going to push it back preemptively. But I do think they might need to start finding some backup dates in case games need to be pushed back.
Do you think that they would actually play playoff games on a weekday, not on a Monday night, on a Thursday or Friday, though?
Well, what choice would they have once they get into the NFL? You're not going to show those games opposite NFL playoff games. It would be a great way to make sure that your audience is cut in half or worse. So What choice would you? I mean, you just talked about how, I mean, I guess if you get past the wild card weekend and the next weekend there's only two games each day, you could squeeze one in on Saturday and one on Sunday. But now you're talking about, okay, if the semis aren't till January 16th and 17th, then the championship's not till a week or more later. Like I said earlier, at what point are guys going to say, you know what, as much as I'd love to win a national championship, man, I got to start training for the combine. It's a headache. So, again, guys, think about that bubble. I think it would be worth the, yeah, it would cost you a ton of money, but you make $608 million from this thing. There'd still be plenty to go around.
I mean, Stu, I mean, the bubble is one thing. It's the fitting it into a window of a later date that to me is the harder, like just knowing how the TV business works.
No, I'm saying you do the bubble to make sure or give you the best possible chance that you do play these on schedule, because I think this is not, you know, right now we're in a, we're still in a place where, okay, we can move a game to December 12th. We can move a game to, you know, whatever date. But if you're talking about, and this is, a, you know, we just saw Missouri have to postpone a game this week because of one positive test that happened to be at a position group where they already had, they were already down several guys, and then contact tracing took out more. You're telling me that couldn't happen 3 days before the semifinal? One guy tests positive, contact tracing wipes out more. We can't play. We gotta, we're not gonna be able to play this game for another 10 to 14 days. That's where it gets really messy, right? So I think you gotta do whatever you can to make sure those games are played on time.
I think, you know, I think you are right. I do agree with you. I didn't, when I read it this morning, I was like, yeah, that's, you know, you, I come back to this word and it's just a, it's just kind of a, it's kind of a useless word in 2020, and that's ideal. I was like, eh, it's not ideal to try to do that. It's like, yeah, well, that's not, you know, like at this point.
We're playing the Masters in November. I can't imagine that's ideal, but you're doing what you got to do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it would not be ideal to not play the Rose Bowl. Don't get me wrong. Like, that would be a huge, huge ask. Like, hey, Tournament of Roses, I know you play your game on January 1st in Pasadena every year for 100 years, but could you, we'll still call it the Rose Bowl, but we're going to play it at AT&T Stadium. Like, that's a that's a tough ask. On the other hand, the Rose Bowl is going to lose a ton of money this year if they can't sell tickets to it. They might actually say, you know what, fine. You know, we if, because in Dallas, you can put 20, 25,000 people in the stands. We might actually be able to sell some tickets to it.
Yeah. I mean, look, these are all open-ended questions. I would also kind of kind of tag this by saying, look, you know, I think you and I know personally, I've just kind of like been, the games have been a great way to get through the pandemic, not just college football games, you know, NBA games, baseball games, certainly NFL games. And the elephant in the room, you can't ignore it when the SEC's had, you know, more than half its games kind of wiped off the calendar this weekend. And
here's a timely quote from Jimbo Fisher that I just, that just happened as we're talking. And this is not the first time we've heard this. So A&M had to postpone their game, relatively small number of tests, but contact tracing. Jimbo Fisher said he suspects the outbreak came from traveling and cramped visiting locker room.
That was the concern Baylor had, right? And honestly, that, you know, when we talked about Wisconsin playing Illinois in that Friday night game, I, you know, who knows exactly what it is, but it's like, in all likelihood, you're not, I don't think people are that, are as worried about it actually happening during the, you know, the 3.5 hours of a game as much it is, as it is cramped locker room or at a team meal or something, you know, around the game. And that's the point of the contact tracing, isn't just like, whoa, you can't play in the game. It's like, you cannot be around here for now.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you're getting into, these teams work so hard to protect their bubble, right? Their team facility, and they can make all these precautions, and but you just don't have much control when you're playing, you know, at a visiting stadium that might have a cramped visiting locker room. We've seen video. I don't know when Sam Pittman, the Arkansas coach, got COVID. We don't know when it happened or what, but there was a video of him celebrating in the locker room with the team, and like, they're all wedged together in a tight space. And
well, you know,
is it any surprise that that could happen if somebody, you know, I know you're supposed to be testing them before they go so that, you know, so that
here's
theoretically
the thing on that,
nobody
though,
on your
Stu,
trip is clean. Yeah.
Here's the thing on
or
that.
Nobody on your trip is infected.
I was on his call this morning on the SEC teleconference. Nobody on Arkansas since Sam Pittman has tested positive. And he also said his wife got tested. She wasn't positive or hasn't been positive. So
that's good.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, like, I think a lot of people are of the mind that it's like, well, this didn't happen, this happened, so it's got to be this, or this didn't happen, so it can't be that. And the reality is, I think what's going on here is you're trying to reduce as many realistic possibilities of risk as possible. Doesn't mean that, like, oh wait, we shouldn't contact trace because, you know, look, there's an example, there are examples of why you need to do it. And there's examples of maybe you, maybe it worked out and it didn't need to happen, but it doesn't mean it, you know, like you can't be responsible about it. And I think that's just what the, some of the experts have been trying to tell us.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of frustration because, I mean, when I saw Iowa's AD, Gary Barta, say that they just don't do contact tracing because they test every day, that was alarming, to say the least. However, on the other, I can totally see the other side of it, which is, I mean, and we've heard this from coaches, how frustrating must it be to be a player who, just because you came in close proximity to somebody, you have to quarantine for 14 days. You can't test out of it. You can test negative every day for 12 days. You're still stuck for 14 days. You know, I can totally see the other side of it where that may seem overly cautious, but they're just following CDC guidelines on that. What do you say we lighten things up here a little bit? And because LSU-Alabama got wiped out, which was, you know, even though I think Alabama was going to crush them, it was the marquee game. Let me ask you something. What is the quote-unquote biggest game in the country this week? I'll give you some choices.
Okay.
Notre Dame at BC. Northwestern at Purdue. Wisconsin at Michigan. Penn State, Nebraska.
What?
Anything wait, Penn, appealing to you?
Your team has won a game. What are you doing?
Okay, I'll just give you, these are the games that we are doing for our picks this week.
I understand.
Iowa at Minnesota, Indiana at Michigan State, Miami at Virginia Tech.
You know, of the all these games you've mentioned to me, Stu.
Yeah.
Oregon is 1-0, Wazoo is 1-0.
Right.
Is that it? Is that the only matchup of unbeatens?
Well, yeah, but we're pretty late into the season to have
matchups. I get it. I'm just saying. Like, I mean, right.
Oh, now, no. You overlooked one. 3-0 Northwestern at 2-0 Purdue.
Okay. Man, is that really it?
I think that one may have the most. That Northwestern and Purdue has, you know, serious
Big Ten West implications.
Big Ten West implications. I think the biggest is Notre Dame at BC because Notre Dame's coming off this huge win and BC had that big lead. But BC's pretty good. And we know the history, obviously. Notre Dame.
The David Gordon game.
Yes. So that's probably the most, I would say that's the most glamorous one. But still, I mean, BC's an unranked team. And yeah. Don't get me wrong. I will take the games we have. I'm not going to take anything for granted this season. But yeah, you're really reaching for.
I thought you were lightening the load, Stu.
Well, I mean, I'd rather talk about this than contact tracing.
No, you're right. You're right. Wow. I didn't. You know what? I haven't gotten to do our picks. I usually do it after lunch. And man, that's. You know, look. I'm glad those Big Ten games are there. I, you know, I'm curious to see. You know, the Pac-12 is back, so I liked watching a lot of midweek action last night. So, yeah, that's that. You know what? Like as you said, though, it, you know, even if the SEC games didn't get wiped off the board, when you go through them, as you said, LSU is not matching up with Alabama at this point this year, and Texas A&M was going to probably roll Tennessee, which comes in there on a four-game losing streak. I don't feel that comfortable about Georgia hanging or Missouri hanging with Georgia. So, you know,
what about Arkansas, Florida? Because that is being played as of now.
Yeah, I think it's a 17.5 point spread though.
Yikes!
So that's one of the games in our Win with Quinn segment that I know Brady and I are picking on TV on Saturday, and that's, you know, I don't know. Kyle Pitts is in concussion protocol as we speak, so who knows if he doesn't play. Maybe that doesn't seem as insurmountable as a Sam Pittman-less Hogs against them. But
okay, wait. I overlooked a sneaky under-the-radar one. Ohio State at Maryland. Maryland coming off a game where it just obliterated Penn State. They clearly have some guys on that offense, right? So I think everybody will just assume Ohio State's going to roll.
Is this your upset special of the week? Are you teasing it? I like it, Stu. Way to be bold.
I haven't even, well, it wasn't even on our list. I haven't considered it yet.
But you're going upset special on this. Rakeem Jarrett. Yeah.
Ohio State's had some issues at cornerback. Rakeem Jarrett is a stud. You know who my favorite player in college football might be this year? Well, not my favorite in all of college football, but.
I'm going to guess and say it is Peyton Ramsey.
No, it's Jake Funk, the Maryland running back.
Okay.
Who
is old? Is as old as we are.
He's as old as we are. It looks like he should be playing offensive line. And, like, how is this guy? This guy is the last person who should be, like, breaking 60, 70-yard touchdown runs. But there he goes. He did it several times against Minnesota. I can't forget. He ended up running for 200-something yards. And this is a guy who'd barely played his first 4 years in college.
Yeah, I remember we had their opener years ago. It was in the time when DJ Durkin was in limbo there before he got fired. And they were playing against Texas. And in our meeting there, I'm trying to remember who the player was. We had a couple of the guys come in, and I think we did, and talk to them about, and Jake Funk's name came up a little bit. And God, that seemed like
he's
so
been
long
injured
ago.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, what was that, 2018 opener?
Yeah, and he was beloved by his teammates. So it was like, well, I watched the Friday night game they had against where they jumped all over Minnesota for a bit. And it was like they were scoring and scoring and everything. I was like, whoa, I didn't, you know, I kind of forgot about him. I didn't know he was still there. Yeah.
Everybody had, but he's got wheels. Ohio State is a 25-point favorite against Maryland. I do not think I will be picking that as an upset special, but I will strongly consider riding the Terps to cover.
Okay. As always, you can send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. And please give us a favorable review on whatever it is you guys review us on.
How about that? We'll see you next time.